This is Professor Allen, and welcome to the Quarter Bin. In every episode of this podcast, I will summarize, criticize, discuss, and review a single issue from my comic book collection, which I will select pretty much at random. Any book from my comic book collection is eligible, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for it. Was the issue worth 25 cents? Was it a bargain at 25 cents? Or was it still overpriced? Stay tuned and find out. For this 25th episode of The Quarter Bin, I'm looking at Batman, Legends of the Dark Knight, number 37, from DC Comics, cover dated September 1992. Legends of the Dark Knight, number 37, had a cover price of $1.75. So I acquired this slightly oversized issue at more than an 85% discount. The story, Mercy, was written by DNA, the writing partnership of Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning, with art by Colin McNeil. The cover, also by McNeil, shows a very tough-looking, mildly androgynous figure in profile with an arm cocked and a fist made, leather fighting-style glove over a clenched fist. Person does appear to have long feathered hair and some eyeshadow, so I'm pretty sure it's a woman, but this was the early 90s, and many male headbangers had a similar look. Spoiler, it's a woman. The issue itself starts with Batman being punched with a loud thwack, sweat, and probably some blood fly off his face. He's been struck so hard. We have no idea where he is, why he's there, and who is punching him. It began 5 years ago, in Gotham's dock area, at an illegal bare-knuckled fight that had turned into a riot. That was where I found Mercy. By Mercy, Batman means Mercedes Stone, a rookie police officer who had a fire in her that he recognized, that he admired. And she was a by-the-book cop. "We don't need your kind here," she tells him. "No way you are entering that bar, doing our job." Batman promises not to set foot through the door of the bar, meaning that he, of course, spies from the roof. He is there as he has been tracking the Cossack, a mountainous merchant seaman from the Baltic ports who was now making his savage mark here. I'd long suspected him to be a part of a major smuggling operation using the city's waterfront. By the time Batman makes it to the roof, he realizes he is too late. He swoops in to find Mercy's partner dead, neck snapped like a chicken bone. Mercy was beaten badly, but she survived. He denies knowing anything about the flowers that have been sent to her hospital room every day. She was racked with guilt over her partner's death and angry at her own inability. She wanted to take the law into her own hands, but her hands weren't strong enough. Batman takes it upon himself to train Mercy, but maybe he was too good a teacher. Suspended from the force for excessive violence, Mercy ended up on the underground fight circuit. "Proud of your work these days?" he asks her one day in the locker room. "I got into this to find my partner's killer. Sooner or later, the Cossack will cross my path. Then I'll do a better job than you." Eventually, Mercy kills a man in a fight. A worn-out man who shouldn't have been in the ring. A man only kept upright by the amphetamines his trainer fed him. She and Batman met on a rooftop shortly thereafter, but that meeting did not go well. That was the last I saw of her, until tonight. In the present, Batman is closing in on Jimmy Gluck, and finds him in his penthouse as he and his buddies are settling in for a little wagering, watching live underground fighting on an illegal closed-circuit channel, think live-streaming over the internet. As he informs Commissioner Gordon of his capture of Gluck and his associates, his eye catches the next competitor in the combat. It's Mercy. He heads straight to the blood pit and gets there just as Mercy is being badly beaten by the Cossack. He was toying with her, dragging out the punishment to the crowd's baying approval. She had come further against the Cossack than anyone before her. Beaten, she still wouldn't quit. and the Blood Pit audience loved it. I didn't. With that, Batman dives into the pit and gives the Cossack a mighty slug. "I believe to be recognized as a contender in this event," he announces from the floor of the pit. "A fighter needs a stake of $20,000. He tosses a briefcase of cash that he hijacked from Jimmy Gluck's operation, and the official fight begins. Batman versus the Cossack. Batman's assessment of his huge opponent was that he was confident, ready, and wrong. Batman takes quick advantage, but the Cossack grabs a pickaxe from the arena floor and, now armed, turns the tables quickly on Batman. We are back at the opening page of the issue, with Batman being mightily thwacked. Tendons give. A socket pops. To survive, I need him to make a mistake. Not likely. Not now. Not with the crowd screaming for a kill. After burying a sickle in Batman, the Cossack closes in for the final blow. "Cossack," a weak voice comes from behind. "You and I aren't finished yet." Mercy is still alive, and in the time it takes the Cossack to correct that oversight, Batman has been able to pull himself together enough to finally take down the big man himself. And the crowd still loves it, but now their cheering, chanting, baying is for me. Despite the crowd's chants of kill, 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 the Batman leaves the Cossack a bloody, unconscious mess. He takes Mercy in his arms as the GCPD assault team bust in. The commissioner tells them that his call led them to Gluck, and the closed-circuit TV led them here. Later, back at the Batcave, we hear a message that Mercy left for Batman on the night of her confrontation with the Cossack, as we see Batman carrying out the related actions that she describes. "You gave me this number and said I should call if I ever needed help. I'm sorry you're not there to hear this, but I wanted you to know why I'm doing this. It was for a cause, for the family of the fighter I killed. I hope you understand. My winnings from the Blood Pit can make me some sort of amends. I'll do what I can to get that money for them. All that I can. And may the Lord have mercy."
Coming soon on Two True Freaks.
Beware the Beast Man.
A month-long celebration.
For he is the devil's pawn.
Of one of the greatest science fiction series.
Alone among God's primates.
Of all time.
He kills for sport, or lust, or greed.
Covering all the films.
Let him not breed in great numbers, for he will make a desert of his home and yours.
All the comic books.
Shun him.
The toys.
Drive him back into his jungle lair.
The entire phenomenon that was.
For he is the harbinger of death.
The Planet of the Apes. Planet of the Apes, a month-long event, coming soon, only at twotruefreaks.com.
Hello, boys and girls. It's your dear old Uncle Joker. We've got an internet access here in Arkham, so I'm doing a little browsing. Lolcats, lolcats, porn, lolcats. What's this? Bailey's Batman Podcast? A bi-weekly podcast devoted to everything Dark Knight Detective? Well, Michael Bailey, where's Bailey's Joker Podcast, eh? We'll see about that. Harley! Get our things! We're going to Georgia!
Hey everyone, Michael Bailey here asking you to check out my internet radio show, Bailey's Batman Podcast. Or at least I'm asking you to check it out while you still can, until the Joker shows up on my doorstep. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a hodgepodge-type show where I discuss all aspects of the Dark Knight's history. Comics, movies, animation, even trading cards and action figures. everything Batman-related is fair game, and yes, that does include the villains, which includes the Joker, so he won't kill me. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.baileysbatmanpodcast.com. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a proud member of the Batman Podcast Connection, which you can find at batmanpodcastconnection.wordpress.com. I really hope that's the UPS guy. Why can't I have Batman in my basement?
And we're back. Batman, The Legends of the Dark Knight, began publication in 1989. Yes, that is the year of the first Tim Burton, Michael Keaton Batman movie. DC promoted this title as the first new solo Batman comic in decades. What set this comic apart is that it had constantly rotating creative teams, and they were telling stories that were not part of the current events of the other Batman comics. They were totally out of continuity with past stories and with each other. Initially, the title was promoted as running only standalone, self-contained, five-issue stories that could be collected into graphic novels. They did this for the first 20 issues, after which stories of different lengths started to appear. That being said, one-off, standalone stories like this were definitely not the norm. The title ran for nearly 20 years, ending after issue 214. I own the first 100, but only about 20 of those are in the Quarterbin database. Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning are longtime comic book writing partners, perhaps the most prolific comic book writing partnership ever, certainly of recent memory. Their DC work includes long runs on Legion titles, The Authority, and Resurrection Man, both in the New 52 and beforehand. They also had long runs in the last 5 years or so on Guardians of the Galaxy, Nova, and Heroes for Hire. And they wrote both runs of one of my favorite early 90s titles, Knights of the Pendragon. I am a sucker for anything Arthurian. And they wrote 4 issues of Batman Legends of the Dark Knight. This one, and then a 3-part arc called Dirty Tricks, about 5 years later. And in this one, the writers pull off an interesting writing trick. They tell the story totally from Batman's POV. The Caped Crusader is actually the narrator of the story. I can't say that I've never read a story narrated by Batman himself, but I can't specifically recall one. I believe it is very rare. I included a lot of the narration in the story summary, and I hope you agree with me that DNA caught the voice of the Dark Knight pretty well. I thought that both the sentiments expressed and the specific word choices were believable for Batman. There was some psychological insights that he expressed regarding mercy, and that seemed believable given his own experiences. His insights regarding the Cossacks' fighting style, the man's strengths and weaknesses, also seemed reasonable. Trying to tell a story from the perspective of someone so different is difficult. That's a reason that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle created the character of Dr. Watson as the primary narrator for the Sherlock Holmes stories. The way that Holmes sees the world is so different from normal humans that it would be difficult to portray his way of thinking. Emily and I talked about this in a recent episode of Short Box Showcase, episode 16, if I remember. Whether it's traditional literature or comic books, the sidekick gives us as readers an in to the lead character. So although Abnett and Lanning did a good job getting us inside the Batbrain, it's really not a place I want to be all the time. I liked the story itself. There is no Robin in this story. I don't remember much Robin, if any, in any stories in Batman Legends of the Dark Knight. So having Batman train Mercy to fight, that part makes sense. I'm not sure why Batman has let the Underground Fight Club exist at all for this long, although DNA do address that directly. The Blood Pit hadn't been high on my list of priorities. Thugs beating each other to a pulp seemed to be doing my job for me. So, I give the writers credit for noticing that potential problem with the story and trying to address it, but I don't totally buy that answer. I appreciate that the writers did answer that question, but that just seems more Rorschach than Batman. Now, I know those characters are similar, but they're not identical. But I do like that by not shutting down the Blood Pit, Batman is in some way responsible for Mercy's death. This is not the perfect Batman, the infallible Batman, the Batman who has every contingency covered, and for whom nothing happens in Gotham City that he doesn't know about. No, we have a Batman here who has made an error of sorts. Of two errors, I guess. Maybe more. He has not kept an eye on the goings-on at the Blood Pit. And he has lost track of Mercy over the years. He is shocked that she is where she is, doing what it is she's doing. But let's be honest, Batman has a heck of a lot on his plate, so the fact that he hasn't kept track of every moment of her life is actually more believable. To me, a fallible, imperfect Batman is a more interesting fictional character. I do want to address the nature of the ending of this story. In my research for this episode, I read a description online that referred to this as an ambiguous ending, that Mercy's death is suggested, but not clearly stated. I have to say, I never had a doubt that she died. And I can point to things both internal and external to the story to make my case. Internally, the last we ever hear from her is the voice recording. And on the last page, we see Batman delivering the winnings to the family of her victim. She would have done that herself if she could have, and she wouldn't have needed the narrative technique of the answering machine if we could have gotten exposition from her after the fact. But we can't, because she's dead. And externally, the story just doesn't work if she lives. Her journey began with the death of her partner, and then was changed even more by the death of her opponent in the ring. And the way I read it, it ends with her death. Without that, neither the plot nor the theme work as well, and I think that DNA understand that, so I am giving them the benefit of the doubt that they intended to communicate what would make for a better story, which is that Mercedes dies in the pit. Without her death, I believe it would be a lesser story from a literary analysis point of view. All of those good things I just said about the writing were almost lost among my reaction to what could be a groan-worthy ending of the story. May the Lord have mercy. The story is called Mercy, and the character is named Mercy, and we understand that mercy has been a theme of the story. I don't know that we needed that punny punch at the end. The only thing that saves that is that the last line was delivered via the answering machine by Mercy herself. Since she is making the comment, playing on the meaning of her own name, and as a character she's probably been playing on that double meaning her whole life, I'll give it a pass. As a reviewer, I'll show mercy. Artist Colin McNeil has spent most of his nearly 30 years in comics, working on the two leading British comic magazines, 2000 AD and Judge Dredd. He did a little bit of work for Marvel in the 90s, and from what I could tell, this is his only published work for DC. Looking through the list of his work at Mike's Amazing World, I'm pretty sure that this is the only work of his that I've ever seen. And I didn't really dig it. I'm not an art critic, so I confess that I have trouble describing why I don't like it. One thing in particular I can point to as a problem. There are moments when I'm pretty sure that Batman has a few days' growth on his chin, a weird stubbly look. It is possible that this is intended to be shadowing of some kind, as it does not appear consistently, but appears enough that I noticed it, and it looks enough like stubble to make me think it was intentional. But then again, I don't know which would be worse, if this bad choice was intentional, or if I'm just reading into that because of weird shading and inking. Neither of those options speaks to clear, understandable, competent art. The verdict on Batman Legends of the Dark Knight number 37, a really interesting one-off Batman story. It is moving and portrays a different side of Batman. It's a small, contained story, and I like that. Again, the art was a struggle for me, I'll admit that. But the story and the writing, way more than made up for that. This is a definite quarter bin bargain. That wraps up my coverage of Batman, Legends of the Dark Knight number 37, bringing episode 25 of the Quarterbin podcast to a close. In episode 26, we'll be looking at Green Arrow number 60, again from DC Comics, cover dated just a few months before this one, actually, early May 1992. If you have any questions or comments about this issue or the podcast, feel free to contact me. Until next episode, I'm Professor Allen, and I'll see you in the quarter bin. The Quarter Bin Podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Show notes and links are available at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, where the podcasts Uncovering the Bronze Age and Short Box Showcase also make their home. Links to Facebook and Twitter are there as well. Feedback for the show is welcome at relativelygeeky@gmail.com. And if you like what we've got going here, please leave a review and a rating in iTunes. It'll help more people discover the show. Thanks again for listening.